If you enjoy what we do and would like to hear more, you can find the portal to all of our content at beholdrp.com. That's BEHOLDRP.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 2 of Behold Lore. I am your hostess, Zoro from E3, and I'm here with my lovely lore masters, HB Fox and Rojan Quest. And later, about halfway through the show, we will have a special guest with us, and it's going to be Ravenslark. So chat if you have any questions for him about anything, about any of his characters. I know we probably got a lot of tears questions lined up. And of course, an opportunity for the three of us to ask him some questions and see what can be revealed, because we have been told fairly recently on our Destiny Forged game that his story is not over. So
I fully intend on putting him on the spot.
Good. That's what I want. So today's episode is going to focus more on the astrology, the astronomy, and calendar of our universe. So I know we have not the conventional, you know, every, you know, 365 days, 12 months. No, that is actually not the case in this world. So tell us, both of you guys, how many days are in the year, and how many months are there, and what are their names and why?
So before we can get into that, we have to talk about space. And I was thinking about this earlier today, about how all of this calendar stuff kind of started to come together. And I think it was earlier this year, maybe it was later last year, that I mentioned to you, Zoro, and Rojan that I wanted to tackle creating this calendar. Because I felt like in order for us to really, truly record the history of these campaigns as they happen, we need to be able to attach dates and stuff to them. And when I began to tackle it, I quickly realized that we needed to know more about the solar system before we could create the calendar itself. Because, I mean, what is time if not tracking the movement of the sun and the moon, right?
I mean, let's put some science into it, yeah.
yeah, absolutely. So that was the first step of creating the calendar. And for that, we actually turned to the community on Discord. They unknowingly helped with the solar system. Without telling them what it was for, I had some volunteers in our main chat channel roll some dice for me. I had them roll a D12 to determine the number of planets in the solar system. A D4 for which planet was going to be our main storyline planet. D6s to determine the number of moons for the first 4 planets closest to the sun. And then D20s to determine the number of moons for the remaining planets.
So now with those numbers, what does it break down to?
So we ended up having 8 planets in total in the solar system. And each of these planets has their own set of moons. The first planet in the solar system ended up with 3 moons orbiting it. The second planet, which is our main storyline planet, had a single moon with 2 smaller ones orbiting that moon. The third had 5 moons with an orbiter around the third moon. The fourth had 2 moons, the fifth had 20 moons, and that one was really fun because I got to play with different types of orbiters there, because 2 of those moons had single orbiters, and 2 of them had double orbiters. And then it was
That's a lot of moons.
it's a lot of moons. I had this whole diagram that I drew out of all of these things and their orbits and cycles. The sixth one had 10. 2 of them had single orbiters. The 7th one had 17. 2 of them had singles. 1 of them had a double. one of them had a triple. And then the eighth had 16 moons, and two of those had single orbiters as well. So that,
so
that
the
was...
further away you go out, the more moons there are, is what you're telling me.
Yes, yes. And you'll find that with our own real-world solar system as well, more or less. I'm not some sort of PhD scientist, so I can't tell you how that works, but it's kind of loosely based off of real-world science, in air quotes.
I kind of like that they went hand in hand. We're still unique in our own, but still, in a way, is
yeah.
real life.
And that's what I was striving for with all of this. And once we had all of these planets and moons in place, we could finally move towards tackling the calendar itself. Because we needed those celestial bodies in place in order to figure out days, weeks, and months. And approaching this creation of the calendar, we also needed some hard set facts about it, things that wouldn't be changing. As you mentioned earlier, we needed number of days in a week, number of days in a month, number of weeks in a month, number of months in a year, and we also needed to know the moon cycle of that particular planet.
Now, do you have the moon cycle for just the primary planet?
Or for I all have of it them? Planned out for the primary planet. That's all set in stone. I have some ideas for other planets. I think what I'm probably going to end up doing is, like, picking out a couple planets and, like, fully developing them. And then I'll just throw the other six planets at Rogen and be like, hey, it's all yours. I'll take the easy job.
So
you do these other six.
I already have the base designs for the Mego homeworld in the inside the solar system.
Oh, do you?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk more about it?
Nope.
Okay.
There's a chance you guys could show up there one day.
Oh, geez. Okay.
As we have seen, interstellar travel is not something that is impossible, especially when you have a very high-class gentleman gift flying about in his space whale.
This is very true. Yeah. So now let's break down to exactly how many days and weeks, so on and so forth, that we have in the primary planet.
So, as you mentioned as well earlier, right at the start, it would be really easy to just, like, port over the real world calendar, 365 days in the year, 7 days a week, etc. And in fact, I promise I'm not going to go on a rant, but that is almost exactly what the calendar of Harptos is, which is the main calendar used in Faerun. Now, I think it was end of our last show, I got on Wizard's case a little bit about being unoriginal with their calendar, or it might have been one of our other shows.
No,
either way,
the last lore show.
Yeah,
I do want to apologize for that, Wizards, if you're listening. I'm sorry. I know you didn't create the calendar. Ed Greenwood created the calendar. He is the fellow that created the Forgotten Realms before TSR bought it from him. And he's a fantastic writer, written a lot of great books, literally wouldn't have the Forgotten Realms without him. I understand why such a simplistic port of a calendar might be done, so that it's easily digestible for players. I understand it. But man, am I not happy about it.
I think your passion came through. When it wasn't necessarily towards Weirds exactly. It was just the frustration of its unoriginality coming through.
It's just, if they stopped at 360 days, I could forgive them. But they had an extra 5 days left over, and they just threw them in. Not part of any given month. They're just there.
She just knocked it off. Just like, no, 360 days. It's cool.
So with that in mind, and with everything in hand to create our own character, I sat down and figured out what exactly we have and why we have it. So starting with days per week, for our calendar, we have 6 days in the week. And the number of days is based on the number of observable celestial bodies in the sky during the longest night of the year. So we have 6 of them. We have the sun. We have the first planet in the solar system. We have the main moon of our story planet. We have the 2 orbiters of that moon. And then we have the 3rd planet in the solar system, adding up to 6 observable bodies with the naked eye. And that's our days of the week.
And I mean, that's how it was determined, you know, in real life, in, historically. Yeah, exactly. So it makes perfect sense why it would only be the 6 when all we can see is 6 things in the sky.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I based a lot of this development off of that exact type of thing. How did we determine our real world calendar? What were the markers for those? And I tried to apply that to this as much as possible, given that it's a magical world. Not everything translates perfectly, but it's good enough. So with the days in a week determined, I could then go to figure out how many days we were going to have in a month. And it actually ended up that we have an even 30 days for every month within the year. And the number of days in each month is determined by the duration of time that it takes for the moon to do 1.5 cycles around the planet.
But we don't have to learn, so the world, our D&D world children did not have to learn the knuckle that's like 30 days past September.
Yeah, they didn't have to learn any of that. And totally incidental, but we also ended up with exactly 420 days in the year. It was not deliberate. The math just worked out that way.
I was like, sure. Why 420?
Sure. Mm-hmm. The number of days in the year is determined by the... I'm going to rant a little bit again here. It's determined by the armistice, which is the solstice of our world. Wizards calls it the solstice. It's called the solstice in our world because our sun is called Sol. The sun in D&D, not called Sol. Sol does not exist in D&D, but they still call it the solstice.
I just think like they want to do more the of the seasons. Fantasy than the science.
I get it. I get it. But I'm not happy about it.
That's fair. I mean, I can understand that from a different viewpoint, not necessarily D&D, but the whole, if I see a video game and they portray certain historical figures or pantheons or whatever, my history nerdum is like, that's not right! Yep. Like, did no one research this? So I can understand that.
And I do understand them wanting to possibly just make it as easily digestible as possible for players. I mean, if you change too much of the way that you track time, then suddenly, you know, you have to take a course on how to understand the days of the month before you can start playing the game system. But if it's relatively similar to our own, then you can just kind of hop right into it. And that was another thing I kept in mind with this calendar. I didn't want to change it too much so that it became too complicated, but you gotta be original too. So yeah, the number of days in the year is determined by the armistice, and there are 2 of those in a year, one that has the longest day and one that has the longest night. So each longest night is the turn of a new year.
So now, with doing the math, we have 2 extra months compared to
the real life year.
Yep. Now what are they named? And did you and Rogan come up with the names, or are they still being worked on?
They are I would say the names for all of this stuff is just temporary. And that's one of the things that I'm actually really excited about the calendar and how we're going to possibly interact with it throughout various campaigns. The calendar and the names of all of these things can differ depending on the region. In one region, all of the month names and day names even could be draconic in origin, like much of our written history is. But in a different region, it can be completely different. I mean, orcs aren't probably going to be naming things after dragons. They're going to give them orc names, right? And then they're going to attach their own legends to these names given to these things. So what I have written down for the names are draconic just to stick with our world dragon theme, but I'm excited to see what changes and legends may come out of the different regions that we interact with this calendar in.
See, the draconic would make sense just because referring to our first episode where the world dragons were kind of the first with a few races being involved. So depending on the races, if they were like enslaved or feared them or were in awe of them, it would make sense that if the true name, as it were, for the calendar would be in draconic and then translated into different languages over time for the other races, but it's like the true would be potentially draconic.
Yeah. And so when I approached names for the days and the months, thinking about that as their origin, I really wanted to play into the aspect of the draconic language where a single word in draconic can almost be an entire story. It doesn't just convey the meaning of the one word, it conveys many different things depending on the context. And so I was thinking about how would intelligent beings name these months based on what they see and understand about their surroundings throughout the year. And so each name that I gave all of these months kind of plays into that, where in like the autumn months, some of the names are more akin to like rainfall and colder weather and like deep forest growth, that kind of stuff. And in summer, the names relate more to heat and drought and that sort of thing. And I'm excited to see again how this changes and what Rogan is going to be doing potentially with a lot of this stuff throughout the campaigns. Especially now that we have it all written down to reference, you know, he can look at the hard set stuff and take it and change it and build stuff around it for the regions that we're going to be in as players. And it really helps to give life and meaning to the world, as well as potentially reveal stuff to us as players as we explore it.
I feel like for like campaign three, we're gonna have to have a translation guide between their calendar and what it translates into like the universal like draconic one.
Now with the 14 months calendar that we have in this world, Rogan, how many months, I imagine it's not maybe evenly divided, unless it is, how many months are all winter months as opposed to the other three times of the year?
That's probably a question for Fox, since he made the calendar.
Fox, do we have long winters?
We do. We have long winters, and we have long summers.
So very short springs and falls.
Yeah, it's divided so that there are 3 months in autumn, there are 4 months in winter, 3 months in spring, and 4 months in summer.
Now, why would you want to cheapen my white girldom by shortening my pumpkin spice season?
Why would you limit pumpkin spice to one season?
Because that's what we do in this world. We limit it instead of extend it to all year round.
This world is full of magic. We can do whatever we want.
question is who says pumpkin spice is even a thing? I mean,
you know what? I'm gonna make a wizard that makes it a thing. That is one of my backup characters in the future. I'm gonna have a basic bitch wizard,
a pumpkin spice wizard.
Pumpkin spice.
You're gonna have a magical barista.
Yes, and just makes and now that there's a new feat that is cooking. Mm-hmm. I think it's a feat. Yeah, because it's not a background. It's a feat.
Yep.
Just take the cooking feat and just has mastered her barista-ness and just makes pumpkin spice and peppermint lattes all year round.
I like this.
Alchemist class. There we go. That's also good, Raven.
Barista's an alchemist class.
It will be glorious. I'm making a note of that, and I'm going to create that after this game because that's what I do. I like creating a million characters. So anyway, so we have long winters. We have long summers, which in a way is really good because who doesn't love a long summer?
I hate summer so much.
Depending on where you live.
I could be anywhere in the world. I'll hate it. Mm-hmm. Give me winter for 11 months of the year and rain for the other 1 month.
This isn't Wisconsin, okay? I don't have long winters here.
I think you'll be happy with the area setting for campaign 3 then. They only have 1 month of summer.
I remember correctly, just to dabble in that just really briefly, it's more of a gloomy feel where it's more, I don't want to say the Underdark, but it's kind of that sort of setting.
It's not that it's gloomy, it's just the location of the islands that you're in are more into the north. It's near the one of the poles of the planet itself.
Okay, so I would say it's not exactly the UK where it's just cloudy all the time. It's a little further.
It's
more Greenland.
Yeah, it's more Greenland, but very very dark most of the year. So think of Alaska when they only get 2 hours of sunlight in every 10 years or whatever.
So anyone playing something that is horrible against the cold is going to have a tough time.
Yeah, don't make turtles. I'm just going to say right now, don't make a turtle because you're going to have a bad time.
Don't make bubbles.
I think the race that I made for that campaign, good in the cold, but I don't think I gave them dark vision, so that might be a problem.
Ooh. Yeah.
Dark vision is definitely going to play a large part in campaign 3 because the non-undead or non-mutated races are pretty much cattle and prey.
It'll make it for fun, though.
Everything up there that pretty much isn't player character-wise has adapted to the dark.
But it'll be a nice relief, though, from that, because I think everyone in the current campaign all has dark vision.
Yeah, everyone has dark vision.
Oh, not everyone.
It's I tell you, you walk into a pitch black cave, and 90% of you are I have dark vision. So
it's fine.
Fine.
It's okay. Campaign 3, I'll just be casting light on literally everything.
We'll all be
that would actually probably be a good idea, is, have torches, have light. Something that allows you to see, because there are certain areas in that part of the world that are completely pitch black 14, 16 hours of the day. And then you have dim light afterwards.
It is Alaska.
I'll get a hat. I'll cast continual flame on the hat and I'll just never take it off.
This is why it's the heart of the vampire. Like the that vampire nation is because there's no sun. They don't have to worry. They've got rain full on 24/7.
See, now it's a good and bad idea to play a kobold because it's yay, because you don't have that sunlight sensitivity, but boo because it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad time.
your characters are definitely going to have to pack some winter clothes.
All right. I like it. So going back to the calendar real quick, have you guys come up with the I already asked that. Let me reverse that. What are the placeholder names for the calendar? If we're going from the very beginning, our equivalent of January, the beginning of the year, all the way in order, to the end.
So, starting with the days of the week, the first day of the week, I've given the name Keen, which in this context in Draconic, basically means beginning. Like it is literally the beginning of a new time, the start of a new week. Everything begins at that point and moves forward. The second day of the week is Alok, which in Draconic means arise. And that is representative of, like, you wake up in the morning, but you're not immediately up and out of bed. At least I'm not, anyway. You kind of take a moment to lay there, and then you rise. You start your day, you start your week on day two of the week. That moves into Rovan, which means Rome. And in this context is Rome the land, basically. Begin to move forward throughout the land, throughout time, throughout the week. This is kind of the middle of the week period.
I'm not going to lie. In my mind, when you said that, I was thinking like, oh, roaming like a camel because it's hump day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that totally works too.
All right. Good night, everyone.
You're not wrong. And that one moves into Hind, which is hope. And again, in this context, it is kind of you're coming over the hump in the middle of the week. You're looking to what's ahead, and you have hope for the coming days that they're going to be favorable for you. And that moves into Nok, which is rest. The week is starting to come to a close. It's time to find shelter. It's time to rest, wind down, as we move into Dir, which is end. And the week has come to an end. It's over.
I like that. That was really cool. Which, of course, I'm sure, as we mentioned earlier, coincides with the names of the moons and the planets and everything that we could see.
Yeah.
All right. So what is the months?
So the months, the year starts with Vaz, which is the first month of the equivalent of autumn. And it is, nope, I'm sorry, that is autumn. I was looking at the seasons, not the months. Kashect is the first month. And this is not based on Draconic names. The months are slightly different from the kind of hard set stuff, which is the days of the week and the seasons and stuff. The months, much like our own months, well, not English ones. English is stupid.
Roman, Greek.
The original names for our months were based off of legendary figures, essentially.
Okay.
Things that we created as humans in our stories, and then, like how we named our planets as well, named after gods. Mm-hmm. These big figures within these tales that we told each other, that's what we originally based our month names off of, and that as well is what I based these placeholder names off of. So I do have names for all 14 of the months. I don't have legends for all 14 of the names.
That's still a good setup, though, that instead of the pantheon, it's the heroes of legends. But that will be the next step that I'm sure will be a fun of the origin of these heroes. So these are all completely made up names. They're not originated from a particular language. They're more just people.
Correct. Yes. They are all names that some of them are very loosely connected to each other, but they don't follow any specific, like language guidelines. They aren't obviously draconic or obviously elvish or anything of that sort. They're just names, and I wanted to get the names in there before we started to develop these stories, because I always found that the hardest part is the name. Naming things, naming people, naming locations. It's something that we as players and as storytellers have consistently not done, which is naming things, whether it's a group name,
like our group name,
or a place, or a continent, or, I know he can't respond, but I'm going to pick on Raven a little bit, or a world dragon. Sometimes we just take a long time to name things.
I mean, when something as important as a world dragon, especially in this story, I feel like that takes some time. You don't just take a new one.
It does. And I did take a fair bit of time when I put these placeholder names in. And like I said, some of them are loosely connected to each other. Like, there are some names that sound similar that might be like a pair of twins in legend that fell to God or something. Whatever you want to fill in the blank with.
I mean, historically, there are a lot of, like, brothers and stuff and,
yeah,
and fathers. And, yeah, so that makes sense.
But I do have names and such for the seasons, because unlike wizards, we didn't just call them winter, summer, spring, and fall.
But, H.B. Fox, that's so easy to remember.
Yeah, well, easy isn't always the best path, wizards.
I love you, wizards.
We do. I make fun because I care.
Passionate.
The first month of the year, autumn, fall, depending on where you are in the world, is called Vaz, and that is very literally draconic for sky tiers, because the rainiest season of the year is often autumn.
Makes sense.
This is what the year starts with. It goes for, as mentioned, 3 months, and then it ends on the first equinox of the year. And from that point, we move into Otis, which is our winter. And that is, again, a little literal on this one, draconic for snowfall, as is prone to happen in the winter.
I mean,
this lasts for 4 months, and it ends on the first armistice of the year, technically the first one of the year, which is the longest day of the year, has the most daylight hours within the year. And then that one moves into Lune, which is draconic for new growth. That is our spring. That lasts for 3 months. And it ends on the second equinox of the year. And then that moves into Shul, which is warmth. That is our summer. Goes for 4 months. And then ends on the second armistice, longest night of the year. Marks the end of the year as well.
I like that. And it kind of jumbles around the seasons a little bit too. Because traditionally, we start with winter at the beginning of the year. Although weirdly enough, the middle of winter, and then of course we all know the rest, but it's kind of cool that you just start with fall technically. And then
yeah, there was a reason for that. I don't remember what it was because I didn't write it down.
That's fair. Now, Rogen, I know I feel bad. You've been a little quiet. Do you have anything to add to anything that has to do with the astrology or if you've thought of any lore behind the calendars or anything yet?
Not behind the calendars. I'm not really somebody who, I think I got, like, in that sense, I tend to go the wizard's route and just make it the base things, because in most cases to me, and I think this is why, you know, they just put winter, spring, summer, all that stuff, is not a lot of people focus on that.
That's fair.
Like in campaigns, it's normally, unless it has something to do with the specific time frame of when something happens, or if it's like in our case that our campaign is going like across multiple in-game years, the timetable isn't really something that most people look at. They normally ask what the season is.
True.
No, but so I haven't really done much of the design for the calendar or anything like that. That's all been box on that end.
Mm-hmm.
I've been messing around with a couple of the planets.
Oh, okay.
Mainly putting life on them and coming up with possible ways that people can actually find their way to it. None of them are opportunistic at the moment. Right. They're kind of oops sort of things.
Dimensional kind of.
Yeah, like there was like some sort of like shift in space time and you kind of walk through a tear and now you're on a completely alien planet.
Wormhole experience.
Or you got abducted. I mean,
that too. It happens.
The Mego aren't really known for just saying, hey, you want to come with us? It's just like, no, you're coming with us.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I mean, we know at least one nation in the world that has the wreck of a Mego ship. Maybe we can get them to fix it. Then we go to space.
That's very true. It's been hinted.
You don't think that Arcastus is already trying to figure out how to put the ship back together and then duplicate the travel?
I wouldn't be surprised if they're already in space.
Yeah.
They've just got an orbital mage tower that just shoots fireball down on certain locations.
Oh god. That's really what the comet spell comes from. It's just the wizards. They're just pinging the wizards in space and they're just like, right, fire the hole. That'd be pretty funny.
Magical technology.
It'll be fun to put that all together though eventually, because I know we joke about it, but I think we would actually make it happen someday, is to not only have an actual calendar for us to have for fun, but also do, you know, potential pinup mm-hmm. calendars of the characters later. So
yeah, we have been talking about it for almost 2 years now.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, I mean, we talked about, like, you know, the waifu pillows and then like sexy pinup calendar. So it's like, I think once it starts to mesh more together and become real, we're just like, all right, now that we have the actual real calendar, who's Miss January? Let's pick someone. You know?
So. I think that's obvious. Ash is January.
Thank you. She is.
There's no question there.
Well, time flies when you're having fun and being educated, guys, because we are already pretty far into this episode. I know, it's ridiculous, and I'm having a ton of fun. So I think we're going to come back and revisit this once we have more lore behind the names, which can take some time. It's not necessarily going to be the very next episode, but it'll be exciting to see what both you and Rojan kind of collab to create these heroes of legend for the names of calendar, as well as going forward in the future, any kind of lore and maybe possible life on the other planets and moons, so on and so forth. So welcome on to our show, our lovely brand new show, the very first guest. So you create the bar, all the pressure.
Oh, bar.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know how relaxed we are. It's all cool. So we are going to grill you. I say that very happily. On characters and lore and everything in between, just to kind of stay on par with what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Let's just get the history out of the way real quick. Tell us a little bit about your world you created, the continent that your players were on, as well as your world dragon.
Okay, let me bring up that actual world.
Do you have a name for your continent?
The continent was never officially named.
Okay.
And that's something I kind of want to hammer out with Fox at some point.
Okay.
Giving it a proper name. It's slightly more cracked at this point in time than it was originally.
Oh.
That's what happens when you let a world dragon break out of a mountain range.
Oh. Yeah, that'll happen. I see it every day.
I hope not.
I know we've talked a little bit, too, in the last episode about you had one of the world dragons, and we, I actually could not find my notes, but we, I think we established just roughly 8 that is known, but we've only really heard about, I think, like 2 or 3, I think. I could be wrong. I said, like I said, I had notes. I don't know where they went. I got home late, but
yeah.
So but one of them was yours.
The actual number of world dragons that existed, or perhaps still exist, is unknown. Mm-hmm. But there was the one from Raven's campaign that has been unleashed upon the world. There is the one that we discovered on our temporary Tuesday game, sleeping beneath the continent, or was the continent. And then there was also the one from Sonata 2 that was disturbed, let's say, by the goings-on in that campaign.
Correct. So tell us a little bit about your world dragon and what it's doing now, raining terror on the world.
So, little bit of history. Originally, the world dragon, they all seem to be imprisoned somewhere. Or sleeping somewhere. Seems to be a hobby. Anyways, so mine was originally actually imprisoned at some point in the past. I left that as a very ambiguous thing because a lot of the records from that point in time on the continent were destroyed.
Oh. So
it's there
a long time.
At some point, the High Elves, thank you, High Elves, for doing that, imprisoned said dragon below, basically in what was once a ravine that turned into a mountain range as everything sort of piled on top of it. That world dragon was actually freed by a lich and his goblin army.
Oh, that's always fun.
Lich went, you know what happens if I do the thing?
Lich is always causing problems.
Yeah, right?
I think that describes lichdom in and of itself as just, what happens if I do this thing?
Hey, Zale's basement lich was a good guy. He didn't cause any problems for anybody.
Oh, no, he's not.
We know he's not. He's a lich. But
the number,
he
the
didn't
number
do
crimes,
anything bad in our presence. So he's a good guy.
The number of crimes that boy has committed is, you know, off the charts.
Lich, yeah. I'm sure there's a fuck ton of blood
on his
hands.
You don't get to being a lich by being a great guy. Anyways, so... said dragon was freed by breaking basically the elven ritual seal that was put holding him there. First thing he did when he was freed was carved a very wide path through the elven city on that continent. Fox, do you happen to have a link to the stat sheet for that horrible thing?
I can certainly get one.
I think, I can't remember if it was originally dropped in the homebrew section of our channel, but I think it should be.
Yeah, either way, so that is a blue dragon, and said blue dragon just took the breath weapon and carved a nice little path through the elven city as a reminder.
Don't fuck with me.
Did sort of one or two laps of the continent and then went, I don't like it here. If I leave, they can't do it again.
Now, why did they do it in the first place? Was it their own selfishness of gaining power? Was he, did, in their eyes, was it an evil dragon? Like, why did they do it specifically?
They did it because in the eyes of the elves, it was an evil dragon that was going threatening to destroy what they knew of their world. The big note about that entire continent is they weren't incredibly familiar with the concept of the fact that there were other continents out there.
So they were unaware that there were other world dragons roaming around.
No, for them, it was just, hey, this is a problem. Let's make it not be a problem.
Right. And how long ago was that? Like, how many years?
For...
That the dragon was imprisoned. How long was he sleeping? I'm assuming it's a he. Is it a he?
No. So, Fox, can I do the other half of that lore dump?
You sure can.
Okay. So, that is a she. Oh, not a he.
Bitches be crazy. Yeah.
Now, the downside of that is there is a clutch of her eggs sitting dormant somewhere.
Oh,
thank
shit.
Thank you for that information.
That is so good to know, because we talked about that last time, about potentially either visiting or just having campaigns on different continents and kind of exploring the lores and histories of that continent. So I know for your continent, it was a at-home campaign, off-screen at least.
Yes, it was. And that was just because not everyone was comfortable with it, and that's cool. I was down with that. But I figured, you know, while I'm at it, let's make it at least something useful.
And we would have to visit it then at some point, because I feel like I need to get in with this continent and see what the hell happened.
So that continent as a whole is not a great place to be poking around.
Half just kind of asking, we poked.
Half the continent is dedicated to basically all the races and the guilds associated with them. The other half of the continent is a lich and his half a continent worth of goblin armies.
I feel a little Lord of the Rings vibe, where you got like a borderline of here's the stuff trying to survive.
There was a lot of inspiration that I just kind of grabbed, and I'm like, you know, it works really well.
Yeah.
We're taking this.
Yeah. Oh, you think it's peaceful.
But it's an interesting place to poke around. There's also the entire northern half of that continent is under a permanent sheet of ice.
Oh. So, I would assume there are things maybe taking it over as their new home, or
people. Ask the elves, their city was built on it.
Oh. Oh, that'll be fun. We need to visit this continent. It's just we need
and
to have
knows
like, our
what
evil
wonderful,
characters.
Wonderful things the elves imprisoned below them.
So, as per usual, the High Elves are the assholes here.
Always.
No, the High Elves are arrogant. There's a difference.
Speaking of imprisonment, and backtracking to your question earlier, Zoro, about when this world dragon would have been imprisoned, it would have been approximately about 2,500 years previous to our current spot in the timeline.
Oh, dang. Okay.
There we go.
I mean, obviously a long time, but it's like, oh, that's a long time. Okay, perfect. So I fired off the first question, so I don't want to hog all the questions. So let's go ahead and let's have one of you, Fox or Rojan, just fire at Raven.
Question.
We are taking questions from chat, too, actually. So, yeah, so Rosa said, how the fuck do you fight that?
It's a good question. There's a reason it was imprisoned and not killed. You don't you don't fight something like that. Your best option is tranquilize it, put it somewhere, seal it away with magic, and hope.
And I think we've discussed that before in the other episode, if I remember correctly, is that the world dragons weren't really necessarily meant to be defeated, just to find a way to either imprison them, put them to sleep, or just run.
Yeah, I have a feeling that if you were to kill a world dragon, bad things are going to happen. Not necessarily like people are going to hate you, but normally when a dragon gets to be at the age and power that a world dragon is at, they tend to have like a death throes about them. And if you like look at the like creatures like the Void Dragon that causes a giant black hole to erupt and destroy like the next, I think it's like 15 miles or something like that outside of it. It does all like any living creature outside of it, I think it's like 1 mile or something like that, like a 1 mile radius of its death. It takes just takes this damage. And a Void Dragon is, a Void Dragon isn't even a world dragon, so
yeah. And even if nothing did happen, I would think with killing a world dragon, if it was ever at all possible, I would feel like if nothing else, there would be some sort of huge rift of unbalance somewhere in the world or nature in general, just like crazy shit, like almost like it's going to be like global warming status, where it's like there's tides and tsunamis everywhere now, and it's just like, oh god, catastrophic.
That's one of the things that I actually find most exciting about these world dragons is each one of them is their own unique creature, and they're not all necessarily going to be this massive, incredibly powerful creature like Raven's world dragon. I mean, we saw that in Sonata 2, where you guys fought one and technically defeated it, but it displayed its powers and its strength in an entirely different way, in that it was able to basically continue on living even after its death. So each one of these dragons is going to have its own unique abilities and its own unique strengths and weaknesses and what it can do and what it can't do. So I'm excited. As bad of an idea as I feel like it would be to wake up any more of these dragons, I'm excited to see more of these dragons.
We'll see what Therian does. I will say, Tuesday, not only have you guys met a world dragon, but you've conversed with them multiple times throughout the campaign.
It hasn't been the air dragon. We talked to the sand dragon once.
No. This is one of the legit world dragons. Not, you know, the dragons that call themselves kings and stuff like that. But a legit world dragon.
I actually haven't encountered as many dragons part of this dragon.
You have not eaten part of this dragon.
Okay.
Well, also, dragons do take human shape, so I would assume that world dragons would do the same. And it's probably not even a dragon we encountered. It was a person.
Spoiler alert, it's Bimmy.
Is it really?
No, it's not.
I was going to say, what the fuck? I wouldn't
be surprised.
I would not give that sort of power to something that crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so what other questions did you guys want to ask and poke at Raven?
So I have a question that's kind of along similar lines of all of this continent talk and races. I know you've been doing a lot of work with races, Raven. Specifically, you've talked in the past about possibly putting together a continent that is home to a number of unique races similar to the cats that you played in Sonata 1 and 2.
Yes. When
you talked about it, I kind of got the feeling that this particular continent was going to be something that was kind of like isolated almost from the other continents of the world. Is there anything that you can elaborate on in regards to this or the races that we might find on it?
That may be a nice intro to one of my later questions, actually.
Okay, give me a sec. I think it's here somewhere. I think that's...
I need to pull up a picture of the cats, because I remember one was think like a that's black and gray.
Yeah, there it is. So, it started, that entire little project got started by the Humblewood stuff, where they kind of had a couple little races in there, and they were, I think those were mostly birds.
Like, I do remember that vaguely. Yeah, they had like birds. They, I think, they even had,
I think
like,
there was
mice.
An owl. There was a couple other things,
like a pygmy owl. I don't think they had. I think they were all like small.
It was like
creatures.
A barn owl.
Yeah.
These would be much more The majority of the races there are that I had been working on were small races. So sort of gnome halfling size. There are a couple of the oddities in there that are mediums. But the other thing that I was working on is every one of the races has alignment leanings. So the world's that continent would be much more divided. Where so like all the lizard-esque races that are being built, most of them lean towards evil, and the ones that don't lean towards evil and are neutral are associated with the evil ones because, hey, you're a reptile. You're evil, right?
Makes sense.
That's reptilianist.
There's a lot of guilty by association that goes on there.
I mean, let's be honest, that's D&D races in a nutshell.
I mean,
but
yeah.
To give you an idea, the larger of the reptilian races was based on on monitor lizards.
Nice.
So, and they are pure evil. Doesn't matter what form of evil, but they are evil. Whereas one of the neutral races is based on geckos, so a much smaller race. But they're neutral, but they're also incredibly timid by comparison. So they're conscripted against their will a lot of the time, and they're in there because they don't have another option.
So are you saying these are just the lizard folk, or like all the creatures?
Nope.
Because what I'm hearing is that Nazareth and Perseus are evil.
No.
I mean, there are cats.
So Nazareth and Perseus are actually based on a Felis race. That was something I didn't create.
That's right. Was that also in Humblewood?
No, that was actually, I think that came from the DM's Guild. As something that someone else had created.
Yeah.
And they were all based around the idea of, like, you've got Tabaxi, which are a medium size, fairly lithe race, whereas the Felis were actually based, according to the creator, around Palicos.
So, oh, okay.
Small and fluffy.
Yeah.
It's
just like your cats are so dark.
And this is, it's far from done, but there's the link to the whole project that's being worked on.
Oh, perfect. We'll have to drop that in Discord as well, so people take a look at that.
It's definitely something that's being still worked on.
Okay.
But there's a lot of innate things. There's an otter race in there, and for example, they have proficiency with two tools of their choice as a racial thing.
It makes sense.
Yeah. So when all of this is to a point where you're happy presenting it to players, are we going to see a one-shot from you in this continent?
The continent's built. There might be a one-shot down the road.
Yay.
I have... unfortunately, there's a lot of writing that has to go on and still behind what's there. Because most of the races sort of get along outside of lizards. Because they are base evil.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, there's always exceptions to that. But I wanted it to be something totally off the wall. So you get to play with all the wonderful monsters out there, like goblins, orcs, all that kind of stuff. But as player races, there are no elves on the continent, there's no gnomes, there's all the races that you typically go, oh yeah, they're a thing, they're not there, they don't exist.
So when you eventually create this one shot, I'm going to be living in hell trying to draw all this crap.
Yes. The other interesting note that I can tell you about the continent that entire thing would take place on is it is in a constant state for one reason or another of rain. So you don't get daylight.
Oh, so kind of what we were talking about earlier up in the north.
Yeah, pretty much.
I like it. I want to live there.
But it's more Seattle as opposed to Alaska.
Those poor cats are going to be pissed like every day.
I know, right?
So the interesting thing about that is all the forests on the continent are actually bioluminescent forests.
Oh, I want to be an avatar.
So
there, it's a fun spot.
Before we move on to any other topics, can I ask, are you taking requests for races?
I will. Okay, so I do take suggestions. As per Rogan, I started working on a squirrel based race to go in there.
I was going to suggest a possum as well.
Oh my god! I mean, it would make sense.
I would be incredibly grateful if a snake race was to appear.
They would definitely end up being in the reptile category, but yes.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
I could do something with that. Like, now, the interesting note...
Me playing an evil character? That. No.
Well, the interesting note there, and I will say it, is there will be two directions that one shot will go. Either everybody is a reptilian race, or no one is.
I mean, I like that. I volunteered that.
Due to the political way the whole continent is, you don't get an option.
I mean, that's fair. You're either on side of good or evil, or neutral. So just a follow-up on that really quick, just to kind of to cover that really quick. Are you going to be like me, where I'm a different Eladrin elf per sonata, and you're just going to be a different Felis cat per sonata? Because you played two different cats in sonata, just like have I played two different Eladrin elves. So are you going to continue that theme when sonata 3 rolls around?
It's tempting. I really do enjoy the cats as an option. They're a lot of fun to play because they fall under the I love playing small races in games.
They're the perfect size for throwing.
No, Tyrus was freaking huge. Christiana was huge. Callistra's not short by any means.
She's skinny.
But typically, I tend to gravitate towards smaller races. And the other reason I started this entire thing was there's not enough small races for my liking in the books. It's like, oh, medium's normal. And I wanted to create basically an entire continent where medium was weird. It's like,
I can understand that.
It's like, wait, you're tall. Why are you tall?
I like that concept, though.
To the point where it's different. Like, if you're one of those races, you might go somewhere, and it's like, I don't fit through the doors here.
Oh, me on a daily basis.
Rogan, I bet you have some questions for Raven.
Why did you give me all this ammo for Tyrus?
Because I'm
loaded question.
Normally, I always like am hyper prepared, and I've got like an entire book worth of point form notes for a character. Tyrus, I was like, you know what? And it came from what his race was, and how I went, how do you get to that point as a character? Because for anyone who didn't pay attention, Tyrus was a Simic hybrid, which is out of the Ravnica books. Simic hybrids are basically lab experiments. And you're dealing with basically, from a scientific point of view, genetic modification with magic.
Yeah, exactly.
The results of somebody living, and I mean, for anyone who's ever actually read through Ravnica stuff, the experiments aren't always successful. Majority of the experiments are not successful. It's like, well, we created an abomination. Oops. Well, throw it in the dungeon. We don't want to kill it. It can be used later.
The person's head is now a crab claw.
Yeah. Exactly. And exactly. So Tyrus was sort of this moment of, well, if they were trying to do something and he died during the process and got brought back, I mean, how fragmented would a character's memory be after resurrection number
253?
Well, exactly. And I mean, we're talking almost like ritualistic resurrection in a lot of cases. So it's like, well, he might die or it might not come back. Let's make a ritual out of it so he has to. And I kind of went, you know, this is a character who probably doesn't remember 99% of what happened. Got to the end and went, wow. Hey, well, I'm alive. How did I get here?
Is it because of Tyrus's memory loss that he was, I don't want to say willing, but accepting death and didn't want to be brought back because he was just like, enough is enough. If it happens, I'm cool with it.
Well, it was, a lot of it came from the fact that you were dealing with an individual that had been experimented on and unwillingly brought back from the dead.
I mean, it's a form of torture.
It was basically torture at that point. So having an option that was basically a, hey, this is a painless and willing death, for that character was a very comforting thing. It wasn't like, oh, well, I've been shanked by a knife or something like that. It was, hey, I can give myself willingly in the process.
Which explains why bringing you back would be, you know, against your will and bad memories.
There was something that I would hope would have come up to like for like a little reveal for Tyrus, but in all regards, Tyrus could not die. His soul had been so fragmented and everything that the ritual itself was pretty much permanently bound to him. So in game, if he were to like fail death saves, he would revive.
He was like after a certain number of days.
Yeah, he was it was pretty much like a lich with its phylactery. He would just resuscitate.
Oh no, and now we don't know what's going on with Tyrus right now in the current campaign.
Well, your only Tyrus. Saving grace is that Tyrus might, for as far as you know, is not on this plane anymore.
True.
Maybe.
But now it just upsets, I would assume it would upset the group even more because We're like, yay, well, is upset. I mean, we're sad he's gone, but he's at peace. Oh, shit, maybe he's not at peace. Well, now I'm pissed because his soul's wandering somewhere.
The flip side of that is some members of the party would have gotten really unnerved. It's like, he's dead. It's like, how the heck are you alive again?
Oh, God. That's psychological trauma.
Magic.
It's like,
I mean, we could have learned that about him.
Yeah.
If somebody didn't revive him after he got keelhauled.
You know.
Just putting that out there.
He's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying it.
Okay.
Yeah. I bet you anything tickles a secret party members taken that entire thing? It's like, well, he's dead. We should have some sort of memorial. Wakes up halfway through the memorial. It's like, wait, not dead.
Who checked his pulse? I feel like Ash would have issues at the beginning. Like, this is just, like, really weird and trippy, and it's messing with me psychologically. But then, like, well, you know, this is very undead-esque. I'm going to roll with it. In there. Who knows? Who knows how the group is? But right now, it'll be interesting to see what's going on with his soul floating around. Maybe.
Yeah, because Raven pretty much gave me permission to shape Tyrus's backstory in any way, I still have a ton of ammo to use to inflict some mental trauma on certain characters.
See, I envy that because Raven did the same thing to me with Jamar. He was like, I don't really have a backstory. I'm like, oh, I would have to think of some shit.
That came from the fact that I don't know the lore in that world as well as I should.
That's fair.
Look on the bright side. Legendary Edition comes out on the 17th.
So you should play it.
It's on a wish list. Okay. It's on a wish list.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. So they'll be fun to play. And I think even a couple of our members, too, who either haven't played the game and only seen videos or played it years ago, it'll be an exciting new refresher, especially since I want to try to pick up the show again sometime this summer. So it'll be a good little refresher. It'll be nice. We have about 7 minutes left. Do we have any other questions we want to fire at him?
A lot. But I can choose one.
Okay.
Yep.
Keeping with the theme of Tyrus, I would like to pick your brain a little bit about him, much like the Kamiroskans picked his. We saw Tyrus in the campaign at one point being, well, let's be honest, he's being accosted by a toy sword and toy shield. Now, I know you left a lot of this background stuff up to Rogen, so maybe this is going to be a joint answer, if not anything else. But while he had these items, we learned a little bit about him as we started to approach Malorsic. But I was wondering if either of you could elaborate at all on his childhood, like his family, his siblings, parents. Was he just an average kid? Was he brought up to be a warrior? Was he shy, a bully, or something else? Like, we know who Tyrus is, but we don't know who Tyrus was.
So, the part of that I can answer is Tyrus was originally a soldier in the... Oh God, Rogen, help me here. He was a soldier in what army?
You mean after he was taken?
No, before.
Oh, well, before he was taken, he was a boy. He was taken in his childhood. Was he? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's all the dying and coming back.
He was pretty much stolen out of his bedroom at night from his at the time golem uncle, and then taken to the hag of the forest, who she then gave to a couple of Kamiroskans.
See, there's your answer.
But he always had dreams of being a soldier. Hence why he had the toy sword and shield, and why that kept messing with him the entire time. Aww. Those were two items from his childhood.
That hurts.
Where he would go out in like during the day, and in like the town square of Malorsic, they would play knights.
Oh, he'd play soldier and bad guy.
That right there,
trauma.
Yeah,
is the stuff that I love to learn about, and I feel like a place like this, this show is potentially one of the only places that we may learn about it, because I mean, if he was still around, he couldn't tell us because he didn't remember, and if he comes back, hopefully he doesn't, but if he comes back, you know, he's I know Rogan, he's probably not going to be the Tyrus that left us.
Aww.
He's also technically a form of quote unquote royalty, as Tyrus is related to the Duke of Malorsic.
True. I mean, we got to keep the theme of all of us being very high class.
That is an absolute lie.
I broke that theme. Keo is no class.
With Keo.
That's and true. Calistra is absolutely nothing in that department.
What
don't know that.
Isn't Calistra's background pretty much he's like the equivalent of a Skyrim guard?
No, Calistra was basically a paid bounty hunter for the
guard.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, dang.
It's the, we're incapable of dealing with this. Hey, we'll pay you to go take care of the problem.
Well, I don't know. At this rate, we're going to go down the line where, like, hey, these parents that you grew up and you knew, they're not really your parents. You're actually a bastard child of this king from the...
Well,
it's like, oh, God.
The funny thing is, it's come up a couple times in the form of me doing basically wisdom checks where Calistra knows half the party via wanted posters, but can't place them.
Yay. That's true. I do remember that. Just like,
so there's a lot of...
Pre-Dragon Ash. Pre-Dragon Ash, so...
I think it was, what, Tickles, Zale, Ash...
Ash... I don't think Rose was part of the wanted posters. I don't think so.
No, Rose has wanted posters.
Well...
Rose has true. Quite a few. I think out of everyone,
the saving grace here is that most of the party has undergone serious transformations between when those wanted posters were made.
That's
and
true.
Now,
yeah, Rose, also, Rose and her family are notorious thieves.
Yeah.
Also, what are you going to do? Arrest royalty? I don't think.
Yes.
So.
I'll sick my father on you. So we have, we got to wrap up, but I do have one, this should hopefully be a short answer. So with Christiana back in Into the Wildlands, we knew that she was it was a Cavalier Warlock.
Yes, she was a Cavalier Hexblade.
That's what it was. Who was her patron and why?
Never came up.
Lathander.
That's what I'm asking.
That
are you planning on bringing her back?
She might come back, so that information is going to remain out of circulation.
Oh, you brat.
I
mean, okay.
I feel
nobody
like...
asking a warlock's patron is like one of those almost taboo things. It's like, I can't tell you that.
I feel like we can rule out Lathander, though, because she didn't cut Therion's throat when he started to smash that Lathander symbol with his axe.
Yeah, Lathander just got on you for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he come down and face me like a real dwarf?
Yeah, you see, clerics will advertise their basically patron on their armor. Warlocks don't tend to do that.
No, Sabira doesn't. She has a present, but it's not really.
As I said, it's not a warlock thing that you run around basically screaming out that information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look what I have!
It's like, okay, I've made a pact with some questionable individuals here. Let's just not bring that up.
Sabira didn't ask any questions. She's like, yeah, I'm on board.
You're all going to have to deal with the Temple of the Thunder up in the north for campaign 3.
Oh, jeez. let's bring Theron back on board for this one.
Well, speaking of Theron, that's the whole reason why he wasn't at the Forge in the Tuesday show, is because there are still like ongoing plans to do like a continuation with that group of characters. So it's like, I didn't want to set it in stone that, you know, that Therion is now the blacksmith when he still needs to go and find his son and then, you know, give Reaver to him and help them take back their homeland.
Not to mention he did say that, you know, he can go there for a day, but he still has other things going on. So I kind of took it that, like, oh, he's doing one of his things, one of his crazy stories.
I was really looking forward to showing up at the Forge and literally starting to hear stories from Therion and watching Tickle slowly die inside.
Oh god.
His character hated him. That was so funny. I love that. Oh, unfortunately that is all the time we have. I mean, I have a whole list of questions, but I was like, I'm just gonna pick my top ones, that way if we run out of time, then so be it. But I knew we would have fun with that. But thank you so much, Raven, for being part of this Behold Lore segment where we have our first guest. So thank you for coming on.
Not a problem.
Next time we actually don't know, we haven't discussed what the next topic is just yet, nor do we have our next guest lined up, but keep an eye out on the Twitters and Discords, because I'm sure we will advertise it as well as our other shows, just in case, because again, we have to make that discussion, and you guys will have to wait a month anyway, so gives us time. It gives you guys time, too. As I mentioned before, it is not the only show we have on here. We do have quite a few other shows on this channel. Monday, we have Null Way Out, where HB Fox takes us through as Null pups going through the desert, trying to make our mark on the world, and things are just...
Well, you were going awry. Through the desert.
Yeah, we are not there anymore, but we'll see what happens. All the crazy.
The world seems to be making its mark on us.
Yeah, seriously. We just keep pissing it off. And then Tuesday, we have our Destiny Forged campaign that Rogen just pulls our heartstrings through. A lot of crazy going on there as well. A lot of liches. A lot of lich shit going on. We also have our Saturday games where he also pulls us through, I almost said Wayward Wanderers. Whoa. Withered Wastes. It's a post-apocalyptic Fallout kind of style game where we play every other Saturday, and then the every other Saturday, we have Azrin going through a Pathfinder 2 campaign, Extinction Curse, which is a circus-themed campaign where that crew is, from what I can just tell, is just burning everything. Not sure what's going on. Just
best
a lot of crazy.
Way to do it.
It is. It is. So we'll be excited to see what goes on with them. Otherwise, we will see you guys back here in a month with whatever exciting new things that we will reveal, as well as poking and prodding a brand new guest. Until then, we will see you guys next time. Take care.